It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, Journey of a Bean. A new documentary follows a soybean from a farm in Illinois to a table in South Korea. I will talk with the filmmaker David Geiger. But first, with each passing year, more scientific studies reinforce what so many of us instinctively know. Time spent in nature is good for us. In spite of this knowledge, more and more people find themselves disconnected from nature. The practice of forest bathing is designed to help people make that connection in a deep and powerful way. Dr. Suzanne Bartlett Hackenmiller has guided many people through the practice of forest bathing or forest therapy, and now she's helping those who love adventure sports connect with the natural world in a more meaningful way. She's just published The Outdoor Adventurer's Guide to Forest Bathing. And she is here with me now. Welcome, Suzanne.
Thank you, Charity. It's great to be here.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And shortly after you really discovered forest bathing, we had a conversation on Talk of Iowa about it. But in the years that have taken place in between then and now, you have really dug deep into this practice. Can you tell me a little bit about when you first discovered this idea?
Right, sure. Well, the first time I actually discovered it was reading an Oprah magazine article back in 2014, and I tore the page out of the magazine and carried it around for a while, and I was just fascinated by this idea that there was a practice called forest bathing. So that was when I first read about it, and then I started dabbling with it on my own with participants at workshops in Hiawatha at the Prairie Woods Retreat Center.
And tell me a little bit about where this idea comes from, because it first originated in Japan, right?
Right. Basically, forest bathing is derived from the Japanese term called shinrin-yoku, which was started in the 80s by a couple of doctors, Dr. Lee and Dr. Miyazaki, who acknowledged that people in Tokyo were completely stressed out, unhealthy people who were dying of suicide at massive rates, and decided that they should try to see if they could do something about it, and wondered if perhaps if they got people outdoors in nature, if that would be healing for them.
But they didn't just take them outdoors in nature. They developed
this whole
routine.
Practice. Yeah. Right, they did. And so they took them out and encouraged them and guided them towards taking nature in through the senses in a more mindful, quiet, contemplative way. And then they took a number of, did tests on these people. They looked at their blood pressure and their pulse and their heart rate variability and their cortisol levels. And they did studies and asked them questionnaires before and after about their mental health and mental status. And they did all these things to these people to see what would happen.
Now, reading about your life, you share some of your personal stories in the book, as well as information for people who want to get out there and connect with nature in a more powerful way. I get the impression you've always been pretty outdoorsy.
I have. I think that my parents always instilled in us that being outdoors was important. We lived in the era before devices, so we went out and outside and played all the time, of course, and my parents took us outdoors, hiking, biking. We did a lot of biking as kids, paddling, canoeing, things like that. And I never realized how important that was, really, for a period of time until the last 10 years or so.
Right. So it was something that you could easily take for granted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So as someone who had access to nature and enjoyed spending time in nature, what struck you about this practice? Why did that seem so different and so valuable to you when you already had, you know, resources?
Yeah, I think that I had studied, you know, I experienced pretty significant burnout as a physician. I went through some life challenges that were very difficult, raising a child with a disability, having a husband who became ill and ultimately passed away from cancer. I started asking a lot of questions about wellness and the healing modalities that we use in Western medicine, asking question after question, and really discovered that there were more ways of healing than pharmaceutical drugs and surgery. I discovered the concept of integrative medicine and proceeded to study that. I studied herbal medicine for a couple more years. And I realized that there was more to health and wellness than what I learned in medical school, I guess. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, but I guess I found that I started studying things too, I guess, mind-body practices, learned more about yoga, practiced yoga, and all of those things, found that there was so much healing in getting outside of our crazy monkey mind every day, stressed out in our head place. And so I guess this resonated with me that maybe there was even more to be had on that mind, body, spirit level in a deeper connection with nature.
You carried that article around with you. You knew you wanted to find out more. What was the first time you experienced a guided forest bathing practice?
Oh, interestingly, I only experienced my very own guided walk with Amos Clifford, who is the founder of the Association of Nature and Forest Therapy here in this country. I was able to study with him in the spring of 2017 when I became certified as a forest therapy guide through the ANFT. And so I was fortunate to experience it from the best in being able to do guided walks with Amos.
What was that experience like for you?
Really powerful. he's kind of an ascended master in many ways when it comes to being able to take it all in, to develop this deeper connection, this entirely different way of communing with nature and being healed by nature, and also giving back to nature in a reciprocal way.
Give me an example of how this works. So if I were to go on a guided practice mm-hmm. with you, what would happen?
Well, in ANFT, we talk about what is known as the standard sequence of forest bathing. So forest bathing is not simply a walk in the woods. It's not a hike. It's not a nature identification walk. It's being guided in a very prescribed, replicable, systematic way to be taken deeper and deeper out of our everyday mind and into what we refer to as the liminal space, which is kind of a more subconscious place, where kind of that dreamlike state. So the practice is designed to do that in a very systematic way. So we start with something that's called the pleasures of presence, where we invite the participants to literally take in their surroundings through the different senses in a very slow and quiet and kind of meditative way almost. Then after that, we do a series of what we call invitations, where the participants are invited to perhaps try something different each time. And of course, they're all optional. Nothing is required in forest bathing. But it might be something where they're invited to maybe experience their surroundings in a tactile way, maybe coming into contact with water in a stream or a tree, or maybe a visual invitation, or maybe using their sense of hearing in a different way that they hadn't thought of before. And then we typically end each forest bathing walk with, we try to include something that's known as sit spot, which is just a 20-minute period of time where you're invited to do nothing other than sit with no agenda, no need to meditate or anything like that, just simply noticing your surroundings for 20 minutes. And we almost always culminate each walk with tea ceremony. And I love the tea ceremony part. I can bring in the elements of my herbal studies and training. We can talk about the various medicinal properties of the plants that are in our midst. And I find that people are really surprised by this. And this is knowledge that we've forgotten, that our ancestors used to know, that these plants in our midst are healing. So we'll actually create a tea with these plants.
Yeah. Okay, so you'll find a local
plant,
something that's growing in
the
area.
If it's safe and if we're permitted to forage. And of course, we always make sure, and this is why it's a great idea to go with a certified guide, that you know the plants that you're using for consuming.
Well, and in your new book, you share a number of plants that are in that safe zone.
Right.
And easy to
identify. Yes, I specifically chose plants that most people probably know, or if they don't know when they see the picture, they'll say, oh, I didn't realize that was plantain. That weed that grows in
everywhere,
the cracks
right.
everywhere is plantain and it's edible and has medicinal properties. Who knew?
So when someone is experiencing forest bathing, mm-hmm. you write that the goal is to bring them to the edge of their comfort zone.
Right.
Explain that for me.
Yeah. Well, all of my friends and family are kids. I say all the time that we should do something each day that scares us. And I think it's really important. I think we get very comfortable in our little everyday zones of going through the motions of our lives. And it's those moments when we push that edge that something happens. Either, you know, we confront a fear or an anxiety, or we overcome an obstacle. And you know, there's so much meaning in that on a metaphorical level and things too. But healing also takes place both mentally and physically when we come to that edge. And so we do encourage, we hope, that's our goal as certified forest therapy guides, that we take our participants to that edge in some way. For some people, it might be just standing with their eyes closed even. And for some people, it might be touching a tree. And it's funny, as a guide, you see people, the looks on people's faces as you share the next invitation, and you see people thinking, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm going to do this. And then they try it, and I'm always amazed at the stories and revelations and experiences people have when they do reach that edge.
How do you think your first practice, how did that transform you? And we only have about a minute here,
right.
So we can pick that up after the break too. But how do you think it affected you?
Oh, I'd have to think back. But I think it took me to a different place, a different realm. And I realized this was truly big medicine that I wanted to share with people.
And you've been sharing it with people ever since. All right, we're going to take a short break. My guest is Dr. Suzanne Bartlett Hackenmiller. She is the author of The Outdoor Adventurer's Guide to Forest Bathing. She practices in Webster City and uses integrative medicine that incorporates all kinds of different practices, including forest bathing, with her patients. We'll talk more in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up, a new documentary called Journey of a Bean. It follows a soybean from a farm in Illinois to a table in South Korea. But right now, I'm talking with Dr. Suzanne Bartlett Hackenmiller. She has guided many patients, many people, through the practice of forest bathing or forest therapy. And she's just published a new book called The Outdoor Adventurer's Guide to Forest Bathing. And Suzanne, so far we've focused on what this practice is, because I think it's new to so many of us.
Right.
And once you started guiding people through this practice and reaching out to, you know, individuals with special needs, for example, can you mm-hmm. tell me what you have been able to observe? What makes this practice so powerful?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I just started offering this practice at different places and then was invited to bring it to special populations, sometimes people with special needs. We did a couple of walks through the Autism Society of Iowa. I've led groups of people dealing with cancer and other illnesses. I've guided groups of just women who are perhaps focusing on a certain empowerment kind of thing. And it's always interesting that whatever somebody is going through, there's something for them in this practice.
There are so many people with different levels of comfort in nature. How do you tailor the practice to the person you're working with?
Yeah. Well, certainly I learned very early on that it's not possible to go in with an agenda or really a structured plan because it does need to be tailored to the group that you're with or an individual that you're working with. I've guided groups of people in wheelchairs, for example, and we had to make some quick adjustments to be able to modify the group for those people. It's always changing, and you can think that you're gonna do one thing and then all of a sudden realize, nope, these people don't need that, they need this, and it kind of evolves on its own, which I've really enjoyed.
Were there Did you have misconceptions or ideas about maybe people that you couldn't help with forest therapy? Because it sounds like you've worked with an incredible diversity of individuals.
Right. I don't know. I guess I am the kind of person who just thinks, let's just try this and see what happens. It is funny. Sometimes there are people who will say right off the bat, I don't like this. I don't like being outside. There are bugs. There are this. There are, you know, there are always, I always say there's the dragger and the draggee. So somebody will decide to bring their spouse or their sister or something. And you can tell those people who really didn't think they wanted to be there. But they're the most fun to watch because typically they're the ones who have a really, really great experience.
Once you've tried this practice, mm-hmm. is it something that you feel people can do on their own?
I think to some extent, absolutely. I think it's great to go with a guide to get a feel for what can happen and how to actually use the practice. But like any kind of actual practice, like you wouldn't go to one yoga class and then decide that that's all you need. You know, you're good to go. And so in a similar kind of way, I think that there is much to be gained from going with a trained guide. I find even myself that when I go with a guide and I'm being guided, that there's so much for me to experience in that way. And I look forward to and enjoy when I get that opportunity as well.
So many of us spend our time in nature alone, and
right.
we're seeking solitude.
Absolutely.
And you write about having to kind of get over your predisposition or prejudice
right.
against outdoor group activities. Tell me more about that.
Well, yeah, I think it's, I love to be outdoors in a group. I love to be outdoors by myself. But there's something very powerful about doing this practice with a group. And we invite people after each invitation to come together and share something that they noticed from the previous invitation in what we refer to as coming together in council. And again, that's something that often is an edge for people, sharing something that they noticed outdoors. You know, it might be that they noticed a butterfly, or they might have noticed, you know, some other interaction in nature that's occurring, or might have had some burst of insight or something that that happened while they were out there. And to share that with other people is really big, but also solidifies the experience in our memory and is really part of the healing process. There's much to be gained by community. And I think as people in today's era, we're very isolated. So coming together and sharing with other people in this way is very powerful and healing.
When I hear you describing this practice, there's this little part of me that has this fear of overcomplicating time spent in nature. You know,
right.
I need to spend time in nature mm-hmm. every day
yes.
for my mental health. I know that.
As do I.
But I don't, you know, I don't want to create barriers
right.
to doing that. So what's your response to that? Like, why
yeah.
can't I just go outside, Suzanne, and
absolutely,
just be
you
there?
Can and should. Everybody should, as much as they can. That's the funny thing, is that when I talk to people after speaking to groups or taking them out forest bathing, inevitably people will come up and say, I just realized I've been doing this my entire life. This is what I do when I'm hunting or when I'm fishing or when I'm running on the trail or when I'm kayaking. And honestly, that's kind of how the book evolved, was that realization that we're all, many of us who spend time in nature are already doing this. Gardeners, you know, all these different people. And it's so fun that we can realize that people with different agendas and different reasons for using the outdoor spaces can all experience the same kind of thing and come together in that way. It also then creates this larger voice for conservation when we can all come together and realize that we all have the national parks, the state parks, the public lands' best interest in mind.
Well, now speaking of that best interest, you have written this book, The Outdoor Adventurer's Guide to Forest Bathing, and you are an outdoor adventure enthusiast yourself. You're a big mountain biker. And of course, outdoor adventure sports are huge, just
right.
huge in the United States. But you observed there is so often a disconnect between the activity and the natural world that the activity takes place in. What did you see
yeah.
that really alarmed you?
Well, that, yes. You know, and I just said that there are people who spend time outdoors and share with me that they've always been doing forest bathing in some way or another. And you're right. There are also the people that we see out there, as we say, shredding trails and, you know, these terms that are very destructive, bagging peaks and things like that. And so sometimes we encounter people who really are taking the natural spaces for granted while they're going off trail and harming the plants and animals and polluting the spaces. And, you know, on a larger picture, this issue of climate change that we, you know, on some level we are all contributing to. So that is most certainly a disconnect. And so I feel that this practice can bring some of that together. And I said in the book, nature heals us, and in turn, we heal nature.
So let's talk about how this could look with mountain biking, for example. Right. I think it's something a lot of people are familiar with. Of course, you need a bike, but I think about people moving through natural spaces so fast, and the focus is on the exercise. You have to not fall down, right? You have to pay attention to where you are and how you're moving and maybe trying to get from one place to the other as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. How do you integrate forest bathing into that?
Right. And that's really fun. and so you don't always have to be speeding and racing. And I think there's something to be said for all sides of that. And when I was dealing with my husband's death back in 2012, that was how I got through it, was moving quickly, fast through nature, whether it was running or mountain biking or whatever. Just had to be outside and had to be moving and running and whatever. Use that metaphorically in whatever way you want.
A lot of us feel the need to escape in that way.
Yeah, exactly. But how can you combine the two? You can take some time before you go out on your mountain bike to sit and center and ground yourself and come in contact with the ground, come in contact with the dirt that is the trail that you're riding on. Take some time to look up into the trees and look up at the clouds and smell the air around you and notice the sounds of the animals and the trees and the birds before taking off. And I found that I have found personally that that helps to get me in the zone of my outdoor adventure. And I found that when I interviewed various elite athletes for the purpose of this book, that many of them definitely do that. The ones who are the most successful in racing or whatever it is that they're doing have some centering practice that incorporates nature. I was amazed at how repetitive the same kinds of stories were when I talked to people for the book. I've also found in my personal experience that when you take some time in the process of biking or hiking or running or kayaking to take in your surroundings, maybe it's even playing a game with the natural world around you, that it helps pass the time. It helps me to achieve that flow state. It just helps me to have a much deeper experience than if I just get out there and I never notice anything around me.
You share invitations for each one of the sports that you write about. So hiking, biking, rock climbing, running, paddling. You share different invitations. And there are a couple that come up in each. And I'd love to talk about how you encourage people to tune into their senses. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that invitation and how it works.
Are you talking about a particular invitation or just in general the concept of an invitation?
Well, okay. we talked a little bit about what an invitation is earlier. There's an invitation that it comes up in different ways. I'm trying to find an example here.
Like what's in motion or the pleasures of presence or...
Right. And I was thinking about how you... want people to work their way through their senses. So tune in specifically to sound for a while. So how do you see that working out with mountain biking?
Okay, so as you're mountain biking, so I'll often do this. I'll decide that for the next several minutes, and sometimes I'll even time myself, I'll say I'm just going to focus on the sounds that I hear. I'm going to focus on bird sounds, for example, or I'll focus on the sound of the wind, or I'll focus on noticing the sounds that are closest to me at first, perhaps the sounds inside of me. I'll listen to the sound of my breath. I'll listen to the sound of my heartbeat. I'll listen to all of those sounds and just focus for a period of time on the sounds that are closest to me or perhaps even inside of me. And then I'll move on to the sounds that are maybe within 5 to 20 feet of me. If I'm on my bike, it might be bike sounds. It might be the sound of my tires on the terrain. It might be the sounds of my brakes or things like that. And I'll just focus on the sounds in that period, you know, in that space around me. And I find that when I do that, I tune out the other senses too. And then I'll go on to the sounds that are further away and listen to the sounds of, you know, highway sounds, which we always would prefer to hear natural sounds. But sometimes we'll notice sounds of airplanes or things that are not from the natural world. And that's okay, too. This is all part of the experience. I'll listen to bird sounds and animal sounds and running water. And I just find that it's a very moving practice, honestly, to do that. And so simple to do.
You cite several studies in the book about the benefits of forest bathing and these kinds of experiences. I'm curious, how long do you think those benefits last after you leave this experience behind and go back to your daily life?
Isn't that right? You think maybe this is only good for me while I'm doing it, and shoot, now I have to get back to work. I have to get back to housework and things like that. And so this is something that researchers are really trying to quantify. And if you think about other practices, if you think about yoga, there are good studies to show that various mind-body practices, meditation, guided imagery, yoga, things like that have benefits beyond just the moment while you're doing them. They help us to be less reactive to stress during our daily lives for a longer period. And it's being found that forest bathing is similar in that way, that these results, these changes, these improvements and benefits last for longer than the time that we're doing them. There was a particular study that I just find fascinating by Dr. Lee, who was one of the founders of Shinrin-yoku in Japan. And they looked at natural killer cells. So these NK, or natural killer cells, are cells in the body that we all have, whose job is to sweep around our body and find abnormally dividing cells and get rid of them. If they don't get rid of them, these abnormally dividing cells will become tumors, otherwise known as cancer. So NK cells are very, very important. And we know that things that we do in our, you know, stress and various different harms and insults that we have to our bodies on a daily basis can decrease our natural killer cells' ability to do their job. So Dr. Lee, in one of his studies, found that after a forest bathing excursion that lasted 3 days and 2 nights, they measured the natural killer cells' number and level of activity and found that immediately after that excursion that they were both elevated, so both higher in number and how active they were. They were curious, so they kept remeasuring the same subjects' NK levels a week out, and found that they remained elevated in a statistically significant way. And they measured them again 30 days out and found that they still remained elevated beyond, you know, in comparison with controls. 30 days out, wow, your levels of natural killer cells are both higher in number and level of activity from just spending time forest bathing.
This practice is gaining popularity around the world, but also here in Iowa.
Yes,
if people are excited about this, how did they get involved?
Yes, I'm really excited that finally we have a number of guides in Iowa who are becoming certified through the Association of Nature and Forest Therapy. So people who are interested could go to the natureandforesttherapy.org website and find a local guide. And this is all over the country and now all over the world. There are over 800 guides. Locally in Iowa, we have activities, events at in Polk County, through Polk County Conservation. I'm doing one. In fact, my husband Joe and I are doing a snowshoeing and Shinrin-yoku winter reflection on February 21st at Jester Park in Polk County. So again, combining some adventure and forest bathing. I'm doing a forest bathing in Jester Park in May 21st. I have some events at Prairie Woods in Hiawatha. We have guides now becoming certified at Hartman Reserve and in Cedar Falls. So all over the place, there are events going on.
All right. So natureandforesttherapy.org is where you can find more information about that. And the book is The Outdoor Adventurer's Guide to Forest Bathing. Suzanne, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Charity.
Dr. Suzanne Bartlett Hackenmiller. Again, the book is The Outdoor Adventurer's Guide to Forest Bathing. Coming up in just a moment, we'll follow a soybean from a farm field in Illinois to a table in South Korea. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.